clear.
Yeah, I think I feel better.
I mean, not that you're bad, I understand the entire issue.
I think it did.
Betwixt and between. We got people showing up at 2:00.
I'm wondering how that was going to work.
We got circling.
You're still on morning.
We are still on morning, yes. Mr. Schmidt, how are you today?
Good, how are you doing?
Good.
Can I get a copy of that?
Yeah, you know, I made an extra copy for good
$10.
Luck. You must be the good luck.
Yes.
There you go.
Been a great day.
It's been a great day.
I'm just gonna.
I think we've got.
Commissioner Saltzman's not here, is that right?
Yeah. Commissioner
Saltzman
is not here.
You. There's
Hey, Dan, how are you? What are you up to?
Hello.
Oh, it's like things pile up. For the diversity awards? I don't know. I don't think we're taking testimony on the diversity award. Are they just awards? Did you tell me you came to?
That's why I came. I don't
think we're taking testimony on a award ceremony. But I'm not. Talk to who's the staff on it? That's fine. Who's the staff on it?
Affordable housing is an important component of your agenda. And I'm telling you, that water and sewer bill is really
big. No, I know. That's super. No, I don't want to pay one penny more than we have.
I know you don't.
So thanks for your testimony, sir.
What motivated my comment on civil disobedience?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw on TV. Yeah,
it was a great.
I saw one night. I don't know if it was on one.
It was a great program, even though it's not something you might be able to do as a politician.
Right.
Nonetheless, as a political strategy, occasionally it's viable, especially if you've got an administration that is sympathetic.
Yeah.
So,
thank you, Ms. Marks.
You're welcome.
What time is the award ceremony?
2:30 time certain. And then that, so I mean, we have your economic development thing. You want to put that economic development thing off?
So I'm going to take a poll of the people in the room. I think most people are here for the diversity award, so you think.
Yeah, so thank you.
Right there. Yeah, this is Yvonne Decker.
Oh, she's going to come back to another.
Yeah, yeah.
Last for now. Thank you. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody.
What's
bureau to form a, we were the first bureau to form a diversity program.
So we have, we are actually still on an item from this morning. And if I could have your forbearance, for those of you that are here for the 2 o'clock time certain, for the council consideration of the city's first neighborhood economic development strategy. We are already late for that. You're welcome to watch a democracy happen in the council chambers. You're also welcome if you need to wait outside. This is a violation of various fire codes to have people standing in the lobby. If you're here for the 2:30 Diversity Awards, we are going to be getting to that late. I would guess at right now we're running at least 20 minutes late. I apologize for that. You're welcome. We will call you. Sign-up sheets are outside. You don't need to sign up for the Diversity Awards. If you want to speak on the Neighborhood Economic Development Strategy, sign-up sheets are outside. We will call folks as we move through these agenda items. Right now, we are taking our last folks who have signed up a panel testimony on a Water Bureau item regarding Powell Butte 2. Dr. Theodore, I'm sorry to have interrupted you. We have a quorum. Please begin again with a full 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. I'm Dr. Theodora Songas. I'm testifying as a senior taxpaying member of the Portland community. The true costs of complying with LT2 and burying the reservoirs have not, in my view, been systematically considered. We have to consider what Portland will lose, including the loss of income, loss of jobs, loss of businesses, loss of community diversity, loss of faith in city government, loss of true assets, loss of ecosystem services, and those are the natural systems that keep our water clean. As a retired public servant and one of 80,000 Portlanders on fixed income and having to stick with a strict budget, a 12.9% increase in water rates this year makes it so that we have to choose between paying our bills and living in Portland. We just cannot afford it. And I have to ask, what is it about no that the Water Bureau does not understand? Please stop construction at Powell Butte and get the Water Bureau's wasteful spending under control. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Doctor. Ma'am?
Thank you. My name is Nancy Newell. I've had a group called Oregon Green Energy Coalition for about 30 years now. It stands for Oregon Green Energy Coalition because it's in opposition to OPEC. So we've tried to get renewables and sustainables into our cities and various locations throughout the United States for that long. And I do go out on the street on different issues related to it because water affects, especially Commissioner Nick Fish. I'm trying to understand your insistence on the 25% rate in Key Freeze. I hope you understand the impact it has as a ripple effect throughout the economy of the city. Because as this woman stated, and so many have stated so effectively, there is no question the quality of life, and not to mention the human right to water that Bolivia established when they had Bechtel privatize water, and they couldn't even have access to their water. We are in a similar situation. I've made this parallel once. I continue to reaffirm it, because as has been indicated by major businesses here, the impact will be devastating. So I also am looking to the individuals that I've talked to, about 100 so far, and they all have no knowledge of this. These are people that have businesses all along Alberta, Mississippi, Fremont Avenue, and they are 90%. The other percentage weren't able to be reached or were too busy at the point that I was able to talk to them. And they have concurred that any delay, any extension, such as New York City, I familiarize them with the situation with New York City. And when you ask, you know, how many cities have had to do this, we're one of the few remaining open water systems, is what I understand, in the United States. So when you start looking at the numbers that have been asked to do this, of course, it's limited. So we are actually setting precedent. So why not set the correct precedent? And there are so many people you can act on behalf of, and your best efforts, even better efforts, because that's what we did on Long Island. And I think it can be done here. I truly support every effort on every community person that speaks to delaying LT2 extensions, however you want to verbalize it is critical. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ann.
Good afternoon. My name is Regna Merritt. I'm here on behalf of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. You received from us letters signed by a powerful number of groups asking you several things. And I'll remind you that many of the groups are not able to be here today, but they include OLCV, the Sierra Club, Teamsters, and WIDMR. That letter requested from all these groups an extended time frame for compliance. It requested that the council not approve construction projects related to LT2 this year, requested that you stop the huge rate increases, and apply for a variance. So there, you can take action today and help on two of those, not approve PB2, delay or halt it. We believe considerable savings may be realized if you exercise oversight of the Water Bureau budget today. The cost for PALBU2 must be questioned, delayed, and adjusted. There was reference earlier to a $456,000 cost for the caretaker's house. Well, if you add in the cost for the electric and the conduits, it's $102,000. The interpretive center is running over $1 million for all those services and the new construction. These are luxury items in this economic climate, and perhaps help explain why our PALBU2 50 million gallon tank is going to cost a minimum of $23 million more than Seattle's $60 million tank, a larger tank. In closing, we really appreciated Amanda's effort to get a statement from the city council on a need for a process this year on the review of the open reservoir requirements for treat or cover. And since the council was unwilling to exercise their discretion there, we're asking that you exercise your discretion here and now and vote to delay PALBU2 or halt it. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. All right, I'd ask the city attorney to come forward now that we've gone through the sign-up sheet. So, I want to be clear as I have been. I don't want to, and I think this is true for, I would imagine, everyone in the city. We don't want to pay a penny more than we have to for our water, our Bullhorn water supply system. And none of us believe that the federal regulations add much value, but they are something we've been wrestling with. We started out with three onerous federal regulations. We successfully beat back one within sort of the same time period, and now we're looking at the two LT2 related to drinking water. A question that that is top of mind for me is the question about whether or not it would make sense to get a delay or an extension. And it isn't just about possibility of that, it's also the probability of whether that delay would, in your estimations as our legal counsel, whether that would, what are the chances of success of delaying and pursuing whatever a regulatory relief? You've been at this a while. If you could inform me and others sort of your views on the probability of success on a delay on the covering the reservoir issue.
I'm Terrence Thatcher. I'm with the city attorney's office. Mr. Mayor and council, it has been suggested that the city could ask for a change in the deadlines that are contained in the compliance schedule now. There are a couple of points I want to make before we get to specifically to your question. First is to remind everybody what the deadlines are. Under the current schedule, Mount Tabor open reservoirs are supposed to be taken offline by the end of 2015. the Washington Park reservoirs are supposed to be taken offline or covered. Something has to be done with them by 2020. So what this, and this was in response to a regulation that said the drop-dead date was 2009 unless you could ask for an extension. So what the city did is ask for the extension that we're currently working under and was granted what we call a compliance schedule. The second thing, as a matter of law, and the regulations make this clear, as has the correspondence from EPA, that if the city falls off this compliance schedule, we are in violation of the Safe Drinking Water Act. It is this, and thirdly, the schedule includes not only these long-term deadlines, 2015, 2020, but it includes internal deadlines. Each of those internal deadlines is also an enforceable deadline. Your next deadline is June 1st, 2011, 1 week from today. And on that day, you have to assure the state that you have begun construction of the Powell Butte reservoirs. So, anything is possible in law. We can, as somebody suggested the other day, maybe someday Environmental Protection Agency will be eliminated. Maybe there will be a change in rules. You can always ask. So, yes, the city could and can ask for an extension of time from the state. The state is now has interim primacy. I'd like to return to what interim primacy is in just a minute, because we're all assuming the state has primacy. It does not. It has interim primacy. So as a just a sheer statement of possibilities, the city could ask for an extension of the deadline. Presumably, if you go to an administrative agency and ask for an extension, you need a justification that that agency will accept. It is our considered opinion, since you have a deadline on January 1st,
June 1st,
thank you, that it would be inadvisable to delay approval of this contract on the assumption that between now and next Wednesday, you can get an extension of time. We think that would put you in serious risk of noncompliance with the Safe Drinking Water Act, and we do not advise that you do that. And I'd like...
Hey, this is a chamber where everyone gets not only the opportunity to say what they have to say, but we actually want to facilitate and encourage free exchange of ideas and differences of opinion. That is hard to do when people are hissing, and if you like something, you can do this. If you don't, you can do that. Let's keep it to that. This is Portland.
And one of the reasons, a significant reason that I suggest this, that 1 week isn't enough, is that we have reviewed carefully the proposals of the lawyers from Pittsburgh hired by the Water Users Coalition. And what they are proposing in terms of a justification for a deadline extension raises a whole series of very troubling legal, practical, and technical issues for the agency. Just to put the most obvious point on it, one of the reasons we would be asking for an extension of time is so we can sue the state of Oregon. That's part of the proposal. We ask them for a rule change. They don't give it to us, we sue them. So, if we go to the state of Oregon and ask for an extension of time of the deadlines, and we say, we want you to give us an extension of time because we want you to change your rule, a rule that they believe they were legally required to adopt. And if you don't change the rule, we want enough time to sue you. And if we can beat you in court, then we want to apply for a variance that we know you think is inadvisable and illegal. It's going to take some time to persuade the agency that an extension of time for those purposes, which are the purposes laid out by the Pittsburgh lawyers, it's going to take some time to persuade them that a deadline extension is a good idea, if we can persuade them at all. And I am not saying this is how I would ask for an extension of time. I'm saying this is what we have been we've heard as a proposal from the large water users and the Pittsburgh lawyers. That's why I say cautiously that the chances that you could ask even tomorrow and get a deadline extension before you are out of compliance with your regulatory obligations doesn't seem very probable, to return to your question. That doesn't mean you couldn't ask for a deadline extension some other time. But at this last moment, when we have a regulatory deadline facing us, lawyers are automatically cautious. I really don't want this city to be in violation of federal law.
Counsel, I asked the question of one of the people who testified, who's very knowledgeable about this, whether any city in America had successfully petitioned the EPA for a variance on this rule, and the answer was no.
That's correct.
And that's important to me, because then it takes me to some testimony from another person who came before us in good faith, a lawyer, who said, as a backstop, we should be prepared to engage in civil disobedience. Now, I'm not prepared to recommend civil disobedience when it comes to a lawful order of the federal or state government. But what would be the consequence to the city if it defied the timetable and the rule?
Well, if the city is in violation of state or, in this case, state and federal law, and this, as you know, any agency or governmental entity has what we call prosecutorial discretion, so they can decide what to do or not. But the ultimate cudgel would be that the federal government could do one of two things. They could issue an order saying you're out of compliance, we're going to start fining you. If you don't like it, appeal. Or if they wanted to fine, and that would be $5,000 a day, I think. They could do that by order. If they wanted to go up, but the fines are actually $25,000 a day. So if they want to get an order fining us $25,000 a day, they could sue the city and seek a fine from a court. And since we would be in clear violation of the schedule, it would be a case difficult to defend. I am aware that some folks have suggested that the Massachusetts Water Regional Water Agency has defended a lawsuit against EPA. In my view, that was a very different circumstance, but that would be a much longer conversation. And I'm not saying, I want to emphasize, that automatically the city would be fined $25,000 a day, but that is the ultimate potential. The state also has enforcement authority, both injunctive and civil penalties. And finally, although this one is a little less certain in the case of the open reservoirs, under the city's wholesale contracts, the city is obligated essentially to be in compliance with federal law. We have to supply water to our customers that complies with all legal requirements. Most of the water that go to our wholesale customers, doesn't go through any open reservoirs. Occasionally, some of the open reservoir water does go to wholesale customers. Those wholesale customers would have a contract claim, you might say, if we were not in compliance with federal law.
Thank you. So, Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. You said in your presentation that the deadline is June 1st of 2011, and we have to assure the state that we have begun construction of Powell Butte 2. But even if we approve it today, the trucks aren't going to be rolling by next week.
Certainly the state is going to say that you have initiated construction by approving a contract. That is our operating assumption.
So we could approve we could consider the contract next week?
On June 1st?
Yes.
In terms of the actual deadline, I guess if you approve it I don't know. It's a good question, whether they would consider May 31st in time or June 1st.
Well, and I guess my further question is, if we are actively in pursuit of considering alternatives, would what's to say that that wouldn't count as much of a good faith effort as actually being in the process of approving the contract?
Well, my previous comments were to say that the alternatives that are being presented to us are alternatives that are going to cause great problems for this state agency. We are going to be asking for something that violates their rules, and they have told me that those rules, although there are folks who think the rules are contrary to state law, the state thought they had to issue rules as they did in order to be in compliance with federal law. So what we will be presenting to the state, as I understand the proposal of the large water users, we are going to be presenting the state was either a simple issue, which is they're just going to say, we won't even consider any of that, or they're going to spend a lot of time scratching their heads trying to figure out how to work through this what turns out to be a fairly complicated process to get to even apply for a variance, let alone expect to get a variance approved. So,
but if we applied for the variance, wouldn't we be able to say that the ball is in their court, and it's then up to them? That they would be delaying our compliance?
As I understand it, and I think the lawyers in Pittsburgh understand it, the city cannot effectively apply for a variance for probably 2 or 3 years. And the reason we can't is because any effort to demonstrate the safety of the open reservoirs would be at least equal, if not more difficult, to the effort to apply for a variance for the Bull Run. And in that case, there was, I think David Schaff said, a year and a half of negotiations over the study plan, and then there was a year of data collection, and then there was 6 months of variance preparation. So that's been about a 2 or 3 year process.
Okay, my final question is, and I appreciate that information, I wasn't here when the initial request to change from 2009 to 2015 for compliance, I don't believe. Why did we set 2015 as the date for compliance with the Mount Tabor reservoirs and 2020 with Washington Park? Why didn't we choose 2020, 2025?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I'm sorry. I have read the correspondence with EPA. And they were being very clear that they expected an expeditious construction schedule to come into compliance. If we were asking for a delay, they wanted it to be a delay that they would approve. They said in correspondence, we expect this delay to be about as short as possible without you guys breaking the bank. Show us rationale for how you can justify this. But I was not, since I'm not an engineer, I did not sit down, I have to admit. I do not know the analysis that the Water Bureau and the Commissioner went through in terms of coming up with those particular, those dates.
Thank you.
As the goals.
So a couple of our folks who testified, and I appreciate their testimony and answering our questions, said that we can renegotiate the compliance schedule for any reason, and that you've spoken to the issue that the Pittsburgh lawyers have laid out a clear alternative to pursue already. I want you to answer that directly, that we can renegotiate compliance for any reason based on New York or based on other applications for a delay.
Well, with respect to negotiations as a legal matter, the person who testified is correct. That is that the regulations say you must have a schedule and you must adhere to it. The implication is that you can adjust it. And the regulations do not lay out any specific criteria on which one adjusts the schedule. So, as a legal matter, it is true that there is room for argument over delays. You can go in and say, we think we should delay it for this reason, and the agency could say, no, that's not good enough, or they can say, yeah, that's fine. I do want to make one specific legal point, because it is about the deadline. It is a point that was raised passingly here and was made by the lawyers from Pittsburgh that concerns me. The lawyers from Pittsburgh suggested that the city need not ask the state to approve a delay. We could just notify them that we're late and that it wouldn't carry consequences. That is just frankly a misreading of the law. And it is also a misreading of the very letter that they quoted for that statement. The schedule is binding on us unless it is officially approved. We can't just notify. So, but to go back to your first question, yes, it's sort of fair game. You can go in and ask for a delay for any reasons. I have been told that that so far anyway, the state agency has said we consider that reasonable justifications for delay are unexpected construction delays. You know, you can't get enough concrete, the trucks break down, you suffer a labor strike. That doesn't mean you couldn't go in and argue some other reason for a delay. That was a point the testifier was making, and it is true that you can raise whatever arguments you think are best.
Does the does doing Powell Butte 2, and I just want to appreciate everyone's patience in the room who are here for this issue or others, does proceeding, if we were to proceed with Powell Butte 2, is that like guilt by progress? And obviously I'm not asking it very well because I said it earlier, nobody knew what the heck I was talking about.
Do we prejudice our case by moving ahead and with complying with the rule while simultaneously objecting to the rule?
Well, my spokesperson said.
That's
one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is, and you've already mentioned, we can ask for a delay based on merit any time in the future. And then does it hurt or help us with the other water treatment issue that we want a regulatory relief on as well?
To the first question, phrased artfully by Commissioner Fish.
Please don't say that in front of the mayor. He assigns the bureaus.
Yeah. I understood what the mayor was saying, but I don't think that asking for a delay, that going ahead with Powell Butte prejudices you in asking for a delay for the rest of the schedule if you had a good reason for asking. As a matter of fact, I heard earlier in the morning that there were some independent justifications for that reservoir in terms of the city's operations. It's certainly part of the LT2 schedule, but if the city were to say we have a good reason to delay, even though we're involved in this construction, I don't think that makes any difference. Now, the second question is a harder one and one that I don't really feel exactly able to answer, which is if you are pushing on for either a delay or a variance for the open reservoir part of the rule, would that compromise your efforts to get a treatment variance? I think that's a question you asked. And that is, maybe Linda can help here, that is a sort of a question of psychology and politics and not of law, I think. I'm not a psychologist. But I suppose you could say, I have heard people worry about that very issue, and I do not want to discount those worries. That if you have a really credible variance application for the Bull Run, and you are asking for a delay for a variance that the agency has made it very clear that it thinks is illegal on its face, the agency may not take your variance application as seriously. If you are in litigation with the agency trying to force a change in their rule, that also might have a psychological effect on the agency. And that's part of what the Pittsburgh team has suggested, is we can sue them and change the rule. But I would defer to the politicians in the room.
Yeah, and I don't really have anything to add except that I think that to the extent that we are negotiating with the agency, our demonstration of good faith in all aspects will be beneficial to our ability to continue to negotiate with the agency because we have shown our good faith in the past and going forward. So I think we need to operate in good faith with the agency, and that could mean that we are aggressive with them, but we also need to make sure that we are approaching it in a way that gives them an opportunity and recognizes their authority.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Carla, unless there's additional council discussion, you can return to your seats. Would you please call the vote?
Fish?
Well, we have an entirely different audience now for the closing vote on an issue that we've been debating on and off for weeks. And for the benefit of people who've patiently waited for another agenda item, I just want to let you know that what we're debating is a federal rule, long-term two enhanced surface water treatment rule, that has imposed on our city two requirements. One is that we treat our pristine Bull Run water for something called cryptosporidium, something which the tests have indicated does not exist as a problem. And the second is that we must bury or cover our reservoirs. In 2009, when we took up the treatment component of this, the Water Bureau presented a range of options, which included a filtration plant, which cost about $500 million, plus or minus, and a cheaper alternative, which was to treat the water with UV radiation. For a variety of reasons, including my belief that the science behind UV did the job, that the cost was significantly less, and that it had a less of a potential impact on the quality of the water, which was particularly important to our microbrewers and other industry in our community, I sided with the low-cost alternative, which in terms of rate impacts had a several hundred million dollar impact over time on rates that people pay. I said then that I believe this was regulation run amok. But I also said that I supported a dual-track approach, that I believed that we had to plan to comply with the rule as required by law, despite people's protestations to us that we should engage in civil disobedience, while at the same time we should aggressively seek a variance. And that has been our approach on treatment. And there is, in the main, general consensus that the cryptosporidium problem does not haunt us the way it did in Milwaukee, and that a one-size-fits-all regulation just doesn't really work here. I believe that the city's actions with respect to treatment have received general approval in the public, and I have received communications from people across the spectrum who felt that we were approaching this in a responsible way. And very few people believe that we have sought that regulation or somehow are covertly conspiring to impose a regulation to solve a problem which doesn't exist. Fast forward, today we're taking up the other side, the other piece of the rule, which is whether we will bury or cover our reservoirs. It is my recollection that every time this has come to council since I joined council, a majority of the council, if not a supermajority, and possibly a five-vote majority, has said that we needed to plan for the covering or the burial of the reservoir while also seeking a variance. Today, we're at another juncture in this debate, and that is whether we approve the expenditure of additional public funds to begin yet another piece, the Powell Butte Reservoir Number 2, Phase 2, which is part of our compliance required under a federal law that we are simultaneously objecting to. I see no reason not to apply the same logic that I did in 2009 to the debate today, which is the dual-track approach. And under that approach, I am satisfied that the Water Bureau, through the commissioner in charge and the director, have said unequivocally that they will seek a variance. and will use all means within their capacity to do so. But I do not believe, particularly based on hearing our esteemed attorney's advice, that we have it within our power to defy the federal law pending that application. And I, for one, do not believe civil disobedience is called for in this case. And I can tell you, as someone who practiced law for 20 years before I had the honor of having this job, there were plenty of times in cases I handled where I did not like a ruling or a rule or a law, and I don't remember advising my clients that we should defy the judge or the legislature or the decision maker. We did not have the luxury then. I don't think the city has the luxury today. This has been a great debate, at times probably more heated than it needs to be. But let's be clear. There is not a single person on this side of the dais who invited either component of the LT2 rule. They were promulgated by Congress, adopted by a president, and imposed on this city. And to suggest otherwise, I think, is unfair and I think maligns the integrity of the people sitting up here. And frankly, we can have honest disagreements on this without our debates becoming personal. And I, for one, am growing weary of the personal, replacing the kinds of debate that I grew up with, which were largely respectful, even when we had big disagreements. So, because in 2009, I believed a dual-track approach was the right way to go, fight the rule, but comply with the law, I do not see a reason today to break with that. And while I urge the Bureau to do everything in its possible to seek the variance, I believe we also as a city have a legal obligation to adhere to the timeline. And therefore, I vote aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
March 25th, 2009, I was 3 months into my term, my first term, and was asked to vote on an emergency ordinance and was told that unless I voted yes, because in an emergency ordinance have to be unanimous, that we would be out of compliance on April 1st with the schedule for submitting the compliance, the plan for dealing with the regulations. And I have many times wondered if there was anything else I could have done with that. Commissioner Fish referred to his past practice as a lawyer. For 27 years, I was a registered nurse, and I was used to following doctor's orders. But there's also the standard of what a reasonably prudent nurse would do, and that I was required to not follow the doctor's orders. If something came up, that then a reasonably prudent nurse would not follow those orders. And then I would, of course, explain why I had not done it, and I would document why I had not done it, but I would have been found liable and negligent if I had gone ahead and followed the orders regardless of my good judgment. Today I'm presented with a contract for $80 million in which I'm told there's $13 million in park improvements, but in looking through the specs, I don't see where those are, and I don't know what I'm buying. I see a line item for $5,250,000 for site and civil improvements. I don't know what that is for. And I don't feel I can support spending the ratepayers' money on something that I don't know what it is that I'm approving to buy. And I also think that we need to have more discussion about how to proceed with the variance. No.
Adams.
Well, the only thing worse than having to bury or encapsulate our water reservoirs is having to treat the pristine and wonderful Bull Run water. I am very concerned and about both. Burying or encapsulating the reservoir, the regulations are onerous enough. But I'm going to support this resolution because I believe that its point of purpose predates LT2, because the commissioner has made clear he's going to pursue on all fronts regulatory relief from the state, and that we have a team of what has been considered to be the best outside lawyers and very experienced inside lawyers to do that in a way that is most productive and affords us the most likelihood that we'll have the outcome. I want to thank everyone who's testified. This is a mind-numbingly complex issue that has been actually ongoing, I think, of well over 35 years in various forms or another, and we've got a lot more work to do. Aye.
Politicians fuck the people once again. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for your comment. We'll have a three-minute break while we have folks presenting for the Neighborhood Economic Development. Please take your seats up front.
Let's get that you've aired it out.